No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. This is a special edition of No Limits, in which we won't be taking calls, email messages, or questions via Facebook or Twitter. We're going to be talking with Mane Bubalo, who is a World War II veteran, was a prisoner of war, and also was a displaced person. This is an intimate glance at an important slice of our history, of 20th century history. We're going to start. I'd like to welcome Mane to the program. It's good to have you here.
Thank you very much. I sure appreciate it. And I'm very happy to have met you and very happy that you have invited me to come in. This is a great honor for me. And I never dreamed about something like this before.
Well, the honor is all ours, sir. We really appreciate you being here. Let's start first. Just talk a little bit about where you were born. Uh-huh. I'd like to lead people up and get the context how you came to be a prisoner of war.
I am originally from Yugoslavia, ex-Yugoslavia.
What used to be Yugoslavia.
Used to be Yugoslavia, yes. And a part of the country that I come from is called Lika, which is Croatia now. And I was born in a village called Ličko Petrovo Selo, which is only 30 miles away where our famous world scientist Nikola Tesla was born.
Oh.
I am only 30 miles away from it.
So your brush with greatness then at that point, yes.
And after that, I lived there only till I was 5 years old. After that, my father moved to a nice-sized town called Bihać, which is in a part of the Bosnia, western part of Bosnia. And I went to the high school there, finished the high school there. And then after the high school, I applied for the military academy, Yugoslav Military Academy. And I have been accepted. I was there only 6 months before Hitler attacked Yugoslavia. And then the Yugoslavia surrendered. And was taken prisoner of war with the rest of them, you know.
How old were you at that
time? I was 19 and a half at that time. I was about 20 years when I entered the military academy.
Okay, so you were about 20 years old when you entered the military academy.
Yes.
So how old were you when the Germans attacked?
Germans attacked Yugoslavia, I was 19 and a half. It was in 1941.
Okay. Okay, so you were born then in 19...
I was born December the 8th, 1921.
1921.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Hitler attacked Yugoslavia in 1941,
okay.
April 6th.
Okay. So you were at the military academy. You were a cadet there.
Yes.
And at that point, Hitler had attacked. Could you walk us through the chain of circumstances that led you to become a German prisoner of war?
Actually, when Hitler attacked Yugoslavia the first day, it was a heavy bombing. About 3,000 people were killed that day in Belgrade, the capital of Yugoslavia. And then we left academy by noon. As a matter of fact, as we were running out of our classes, two bombs fell into the area close to one, hit the roof of my building when I was in the class. So luckily, neither one of the two bombs exploded. And then after that, we hid in a little creek next to our academy. And we stayed there till noon. After that, we retreated on the outside of the Belgrade and start walking toward one big forest south of Belgrade, and we intended to reach Adriatic coast because in World War One, the Serbian army retreated toward Adriatic Sea, and they boarded the ships, and they went to Africa, you know, where they got prepared and returned back in World War One. 1914,
so your intention was to try to find a way to get out of Yugoslavia,
yes,
connect with the Allied forces,
yes,
and then find a way to fight.
Yes. And, unfortunately, we only reached the city of called Foča, which is a southeastern part of Yugoslavia. And then we waited there 3 days when Yugoslavia surrendered and Hitler's army came to the town and captured us. They took the weapons from us and they released us. They let us go because they didn't have time and enough soldiers to keep the track of us. Yeah, because there was about 280 of us only military cadets. So they let us go home, knowing well that someday their allies who joined Hitler from Yugoslavia, which were the Muslims, Bosnian Muslims, Croatians, and some other, we have seven different national groups in Yugoslavia. So they didn't care about us, whether we were going to be watched by them or whether they were going to be catched again later on. So he let us go. We left. Most of them left for Serbia, and about eight of us came from my town. We headed the western part of Bosnia and on the way to home. We were stopped at one town called Teslic. Mm-hmm. We were stopped there by the Croatians who joined Hitler's army immediately, first day when Hitler abandoned, attacked Yugoslavia. Bosnian Muslims and the Croatians, they joined Hitler's troops same day when he attacked Yugoslavia. We Serbs were the only one that Hitler was interested, you know, to capture.
You were a targeted population.
Yeah, we were a targeted population, yes.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with Mane Bubalo about his experiences as a German prisoner of war and later a displaced person. We're not taking calls, email messages, or messages via Facebook or Twitter for this special recorded broadcast of No Limits. Yeah. So we brought you up to the point where you've been taken prisoner now by Croatian sympathizers with the Nazis.
Yes.
With the Nazis.
Yeah.
But, so what? Go ahead, please.
What happened there in that town? You know, I don't know if you know about the history of that, the hate that was between the Croatians and the Serbs throughout the history. They wanted to kill us right there as they took us out of the train. He lined us up at the wall. Each one of us was held by the two Croatian soldiers. One of them held a knife already by our throats, and he waited for the order to be killed, to kill us. The people were hollering, "Kill him, kill him, kill him." At that moment, luckily, one of the German citizens who was born in Yugoslavia, you know, we had a lot of Germans, people of German descent that were citizens of Yugoslavia in that part of the country. That man was in charge of the town, and he said, "Stop it. Those are not your prisoners of war. Those are German prisoners of war. I'll take care of them, and I'm going tomorrow when the Germans arrive, I'm going to give them to the German army."
What were you thinking at that point?
I couldn't think nothing. I was completely my mind was completely shut off. You know, I was just waiting when this knife is going to get through my throat. You know, and a million and a half people have been killed from 1941 to 1945. My three uncles, my little brother, 13-year-old, has been killed in that period between 41 and 45. And many of our other relatives, like the relatives of my friend who came from Yugoslavia yesterday, you know, and visited us. So I lost all the hope, you know, that I'm going to live anymore, you know. So I couldn't say one word. Even if I tried, I was stuck. I couldn't talk, right? Same thing with the other eight guys. So, and that guy took us away from the Croatians, and he kept us for 3 days in one place called gymnasium. Mm-hmm. Gymnasium, it's a place where the people exercise, you know, like here in America. But we barely survived 3 days without any food. Luckily, one lady had a restaurant right next to that gymnasium. And at night, she was sneaking in secretly and bringing us bread and apples. That's how we survived the 3 days. Yeah.
So it's an interesting, I mean, to recap here, I mean, you dodged death at the beginning when both of those bombs landed, fortunately did not go off. You're standing at one point as prisoner of a Croatian mob, basically, with knives. But there's also kind of this odd dynamic where you've got a German who steps in to save your lives and someone who's there who's also showing some basic human decency by feeding you as well.
Yes, we... He gave us to the Germans next 2 days later. The German army came into the town. And we, three of us cadets, there were about eight of us there at that time. Three of us spoke German and French because we learned 8 years French in our high school, 5 years German, and 4 years Latin. We carried three languages, it's a must subject, you know. Mm-hmm. So we spoke to the German officer, and I told him that according to the Geneva Conventions, the cadets are also treated as officers. Mm-hmm. So they had a camp about 30 miles away called Stalag 7A. That's a prisoner of war camp. Mm-hmm. And they took us over there to there and put us with the officers. Mm-hmm. From that camp, they separated the officers from the soldiers. There must have been about 10,000 soldiers in that camp. So they separated 30 officers and eight of us cadets. And they took us to Graz, which is a town in Austria. They separated us from the rest of the common soldiers.
So you were with officers.
So we were officers. They took us to Graz, and they're going to put us then from Graz in another town where only was the camp for the Serbian officers as a prisoners of war. Yeah. So that was that short story, you know, till we got...
And how long were you there in that
camp? Yeah, we were from Graz, we were sent to a town called Hohenfels. That was a prisoner of war camp, Stalag 7A. Mm-hmm. It's about 30 miles away from an infamous concentration camp of Dachau, close to Dachau. You probably heard of that.
Yes. So, actually been to Dachau. Yeah.
And... we stayed there just a short time. And then that was a camp with everybody, prisoners of war, the common soldiers, you know, and us. And then finally, you know, we ended up being together again with the with, so they separated us again from the horses and left us in their big camp, Stalag 7A.
If you are just joining us, this is a special edition of No Limits. We're talking with former World War II prisoner of war, Mane Bubalo, who also was a displaced person. We're not taking calls or messages on this broadcast, but we will be back soon. Okay. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the statehousefile.com, and your host. This is a special edition of No Limits in which we are talking with former World War II prisoner of war, Mane Bubalo, about his experiences. We are not taking calls or questions today, but hearing this fascinating story, what we've heard so far is about how Mane became a prisoner of war, how basically he escaped death twice already, once when a couple of German bombs did not go off when they hit the building that he was in, and another time when he and his fellow cadets were prisoners of a Croatian mob. We'd left you in Stalag 7A. Right. Can you tell us what happens then?
Well, in Stalag 7A, there was another miracle day for us. One day, we stayed there in 1941 when Americans came April 6th, 1945, and we were in prison camp for 4 years, you know. In 1945, we came, the Americans came about early in the morning. Mm-hmm. We waited for them. We were surprised that the two soldiers who kept care of us and every morning distributed us to the farmers, you know, mm-hmm. for work, and picked us at night, you know, bring us back to the city. But, we were in one building, which was like a restaurant and a tavern, you know, mm-hmm. and we were on the second floor. About 30 of us, prisoners of Serbian prisoners of war, worked for the farmers. So we were there in that village. Not in the camps. Mm-hmm. See, you either go in the factories and work every day or you go to the farms. So we got so skinny and tiny, mm-hmm. me and my three schoolmates, mm-hmm. and we volunteered to go to work on the farm. So they moved us.
So you could get some food?
So we could get the food, at least yeah. bread. The bread was something you dream about, it, mm-hmm. that's all. After we became skin and bones, I suggested to my best buddies that went to school with me 8 years, they said, why don't we voluntarily go to sign up to go to the farmers to work? 3 days later, they came, they picked us up, and they sent us to that farm. Well, at that farm, we were almost 3.5 years when Americans came. On April 6th, 1945, we were surprised that the two German soldiers that watched us every day have disappeared. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to be captured by Americans, so we were alone. So the rumors were Americans are only 40 miles away from that town. Mm-hmm. So we were up day and night. Mm-hmm. Till one morning, we spotted Americans at the one forest. They were just moving out of the forest into a little a green spot, you know, like a little I don't know what they call it, you know, area where they cut the grass for the cows and so. So we...
Pasture. Yes.
So we lined up in front of that building waiting for Americans, you know. Right away, my buddy and I pulled a sheet, a bed sheet, white sheet, and wrote big letters, P-O-W. And we got him on the roof of that building, and as he spread that big sheet, and they stopped moving, Americans. They thought maybe it was a kind of trick that the Germans tried to pull on them.
Yeah.
They immediately sent two jeeps with four soldiers in. They arrived. They spotted us. We hailed them, you know, when they came. Hail Americans. We said it in Serbian. Živeli American soldiers, you know. But anyway, they were convinced that we were truly the prisoners of war. They immediately called back. And now come whole mess of the cars and tanks. And in one of the cars that arrived was one officer, big officer, very corpulent man, standing in the car. And he wanted to know if anyone of us prisoners speaks English. Neither one spoke English, unfortunately. But does anybody speak French or German? So three of us cadets among these 80s guys raised a hand. He picked me up, that officer, and he told me that we are not prisoners of war anymore. We are free. We don't work anymore for these SOBs. Mm-hmm. He said a mouthful. I didn't understand
Let's stay with the abbreviation. I didn't know. Can't use the
After he left, I asked the soldiers what it was. They interpreted because they knew German, of those soldiers. I said, who is this officer? I said, he impressed me so much, you know. And he also emphasized that we have to be very decent and not to try to kill German citizens because some Polish prisoners of war already did start hurting them.
Oh, we're doing revenge, yeah.
He said, don't do that.
Yeah.
But they have to feed you as long as they are here. I said, but we'll take care of you for a couple of weeks till we move you back to Munich, where the big officers' camp is. So the soldier said, well, that's a general pattern.
Yeah.
I said, I was speechless. General Patton.
And you knew who General Patton was.
I did, because I worked for the farmer who was anti-Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
He allowed me to use his the radio and listen to BBC.
Oh.
And while I was watching the news, he was walking around the house because it was very dangerous to listen English channels.
Mm-hmm.
He would always come in if any car comes because we don't know whether it's military or what. So he would let me shut it off. So he knew everything was going on. You know, he knew about the German tragedy in Stalingrad, which German people didn't know much about it, you know. So I informed him about everything because his son was taken to the army at 70 years old. The only son he had. First day on the Russian front, he was killed. So the farmer, when he had services in the church, he did not invite any SS or Hitler's party members to the church. He didn't allow them, you know. So anyway, as the general left, he left us out there, and then we stayed there for 2 weeks. We didn't have to work. We did get fed by the Germans, you know. And then one day they took us to Munich. We joined the camp. It used to be SS buildings where the Hitler's SS troops were, three-story buildings, you know. We stayed there, and then after that, we refused to go back to Yugoslavia, as they were started returning all the prisoners from the camps mm-hmm. back home. And a bunch of us, mostly intellectuals uh-huh. and so students, and all officers, the Serbian officers, didn't go back. We stayed there under the care of American consulate in Munich. And I was very fortunate. And then one day, as we started the school, American consulate in Munich organized the school in one of the German museum. Mm-hmm. About 18 of us started studying. Mm-hmm. And about a week later, one American lady came with a jeep mm-hmm. and two soldiers, and she wanted to talk to the students. Mm-hmm. We were there. We knew she was coming because she informed me the day ahead that the students not to go to school. That lady is going to come. Who was she? She was the representative of American Church World Service. Mm-hmm. They took care of all displaced persons. Mm-hmm. So we were, instead of prisoners of war, we are now displaced persons. Mm-hmm. But we are the students. We, American consulate, took care of us. We had food, we had everything. We had the books. They had the professors who were also refugees, you know. Mm-hmm. But anybody who spoke German, who could go study. So we studied, and when that lady came and asked us if we would like to continue our studies in America, we were speechless.
And I would like to get to that portion of your life. Before we get there, though, I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more about the relationship you had with the German farmer uh-huh. who lost uh-huh. this. Okay. I mean, you worked there for three and a half years.
Yes.
Which, and it sounds like, far from being a Nazi sympathizer.
He was anti-Nazi.
He was anti-Nazi, had a profound sense of grievance toward the Nazis because his son had been killed in the war.
Yes.
And I should say to our listeners, if you're just joining us, this special broadcast of No Limits, which we're talking with former World War II prisoner of war, Mane Bubalo, about his experiences. We've just learned that, A, he met General Patton when he was liberated.
Yes.
And that his experience as a prisoner of war put him in a kind of different relationship with a German citizen whose feelings about the war and about his home country uh-huh. were ambivalent at best. Could you talk a little bit about who this farmer was?
Yeah, his name is Peter Hauder. Mm-hmm. He had a wonderful, wonderful lady, a wife. He had two daughters. One was married, had two boys. I had one boy and a little girl. And the other daughter wasn't married. She was about 21 years old. We worked together every day, you know. They are very hardworking people. Mm-hmm. They are excellent workers, you know. The work was very hard for me because I never worked even in my home when I was a student, you know, and went to high school.
You were raised as a farmer.
I was just watching the two cows, you know, and feeding them, you know, somewhere around the road. But the work in Germany was very hard. Mm-hmm. They are very hard working people. Yeah. I had, in 3 days, I was loading the manures under the wagons, mm-hmm. taking them under the land that they are going to work on and dig. And it was a spring anyway. So I had blisters all over my hands, mm-hmm. you know. But they were very nice to me. I can say they treated me as their own son, those people. So when I came in, they didn't know that I speak German. So when I say just, you know, good morning, you know, to say in German, we had a breakfast, you know, before we go to work. And I saw two little children behind the two doors.
Mm-hmm.
They just stick their heads to. I said, you have little children? I started talking German. They were surprised. I said, yeah, he said, they explained it to me that the cables that minister of their propaganda was telling them and warning them, watch yourself and don't never be alone with a prisoner, Serbian prisoner of war. He said, they are wild people. They love to kill the children and eat them.
Oh, boy.
That was the propaganda of Goebbels.
So you had
when they saw me, and I speak in German, I said, please bring those children out. I said, I speak German fluently. I said, I learned it in school. I speak another language. As a matter of fact, we had to learn three languages. And I said, bring the children here. The children came. I hugged them, you know, and kissed them. And they were shocked. They were shocked. They forgot about the cables from there on.
Mm-hmm.
They never wanted to hear about it anymore. Yeah.
Now, you had, it sounds like this is a different kind of relationship or whatever in that, you know, technically you're supposed to be enemies, but it sounds like you work together
when
and you liked each other.
Speaking to them, I saw different expressions on their face, you know. Those girls, those two daughters, they were so nice to me. I was afraid as a prisoner of war ever come close to them. You know, we kept, because before we came to that town, they had a French prisoner of war who the Germans captured in 1939. They started the war against Poland and France in 1939.
Mm-hmm.
Some girls started having very close relationship with the German women. It was very, they cut their hairs, shaved their heads, you know, as a punishment, you know. And they sent all the prisoners, French prisoners of war, into the camp, and they brought 30 Serbian prisoners of war into that village. That's how I ended up into that village.
And working at that
and
farm.
And we worked at that farm for the next 3.5 years. First 6 years I spent it in the camp, and then the other three and a half years I spent at that farm.
Did you stay in touch with that family after the war at all? Or
I did. I stayed there. After I was taken to Munich, you know, after that, I did not. I did write them a letter, and take a letter, you know, and we couldn't leave the camp, you know.
Did you ever hear back from them? Did you ever? You did not.
I did not.
So you don't know what happened to them.
I did not know what happened. The little boy, I wish I saw him 10, 15 years later, but I couldn't see it.
Oh, so did see him 10 or 15 years.
I only stayed 4 years there, you know.
Yeah.
But while I was going to school for 2 years, I stayed. After 1944, Americans took care of us at American consulate. And I stayed 2 more years till February. Yeah, it was February 1947. Yeah.
And that will be a good place for us to pick up. If you are just joining us, we are talking on this special edition of No Limits with former World War II prisoner of war, Mane Bukolo. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. In this special edition of No Limits, we are not taking calls or email messages or questions via social media. We're focusing instead on a special recorded one-on-one conversation with former World War II prisoner of war, Mane Bubalo. We've been talking about his experiences first, how he came to be captured, how he somehow miraculously avoided death at least twice, once when a couple of German bombs that fell on the building he was in for some reason did not go off. And the second time when a Croatian mob had taken him and some of his fellow cadets prisoner, held knives to their throats, but a German interceded and spared them. We also have been talking about how he developed a relationship with a farm family, a German farm family, where he worked during his time as a prisoner of war. And then also his meeting with General George Patton when he and his fellow prisoners of war were liberated. So you had been liberated at this point, and you'd been transferred to Munich, where you became a displaced person. You did not want to go back to Yugoslavia. What was Yugoslavia, and continued to be Yugoslavia until I think the early 1990s. Could you talk a little bit about the reasons why you did not want to go back?
Yeah.
Why it was not safe for you to go back is probably a more appropriate answer question.
Well, even as a student in my town, even I went to high school, we learned a lot about the communism ideology. Mm-hmm. We were very religious people. I came from very religious mother and father. Went to church. I sang in the church choir when I was even 10 years old. And even today, I still sing in my church here in Indianapolis. And we were absolutely opposed to the communist ideology. Mm-hmm. At that time, they were very, very arrogant as the Soviet Union, you know. Mm-hmm. They were, and especially when they turned out, you know, to fight America. Mm-hmm. America was our ally in World War One. Mm-hmm. America, we refused Hitler's ultimatum 1941. We didn't want to join him either. Mm-hmm. Because we want to stay true friends to Americans, mm-hmm. because they saved us in the World War One, mm-hmm. from the German occupation, and we were true America's allies. So we actually committed a national suicide by refusing Hitler in 1941, mm-hmm. because we wanted to stay very true to the as American ally. So we were all the time, even as a student of the high school, totally anti-communist people. You know? Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, if we did have some communists in our school, they have been expelled. Mm-hmm. You know, so actually, Yugoslavia at that time, majority of the people were pro-American, you know, anti-communist Soviet Union, you know. Mm-hmm. And after that, especially after I went to military academy, you know, it was my ideal, because this is a way to find and express my patriotism to the country by serving as a Yugoslav officer, you know, mm-hmm. because I had a brother, a cousin from my, the son of my uncle, who was a wonderful officer already, a young officer. I admired him, And I said, I am going to be officer too, you know, one of mm-hmm. these days. So so we did the school. We were totally, totally anti-communistic, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, was some of it also, and I may be projecting here, was some of it that you were a little bit, you'd already spent 4 years as prisoner of war. It looked like there might be some conflict in Eastern Europe if you weren't, went back. And as you said earlier, you'd lost three uncles to the war
yeah.
and a nephew
yeah, yeah.
who had been killed.
Yeah.
Was there a sense that you were just tired of war and tired of what came with it?
It was a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
It was a absolutely tragedy for our people after Hitler attacked Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
Yugoslavia was dissected into the 7 different countries.
Mm-hmm.
7 different countries. Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia, southern part of Montenegro, and then another couple of small countries down in the southern part of Yugoslavia. There was 7 different countries.
Mm-hmm.
Serbia, that had 11 million people, you know, came down to only 6 million people after the World War II, mm-hmm. you know.
So you lost 5 million people.
Over 4 million of our people have been massacred. So only during the World War II were 1.5 million mm-hmm. massacred, you know. So it was the one, I think, if any country has been suffer more tragically, I couldn't find one
mm-hmm.
more than Serbia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was it hard to make the decision not to go back? I mean, to say I'm going to miss my home.
And when we got Americans liberating us, that was it.
Uh-huh.
That was it. I never dreamed of one day be so lucky as a happy man to get the chance to go to America, even to study, continue the study. That was another miraculous day in my life. First one was being liberated by Americans, heroes with General Patton. The second most miraculous day and the biggest day of my life was coming to the United States to become an American citizen.
When did you come to this country?
I came to America the end of 1946. We started going, we were called to the embassy in Munich, and it would be told, you know, that be ready, get all our papers. They helped us, you know, mm-hmm. take care of all the papers. And then by the end of this year, 1946, in April 6, 1947, we got on the boat in northern Germany, and we were on the boat for America. Believe me, I didn't even believe when I was on the boat mm-hmm. that I'm going to America. That was something unbelievable to all of us to be so lucky. Ex-prisoners of war, now the displaced persons, and go to America, the impossible dream.
Mm-hmm.
When we came close to New York, and we saw the Statue of Liberty, I crossed myself and said, yes, we are going to America. And then we got out of the boat, 18 of us,
it's okay. Take your time, sir. Take your time.
18 of us. You got that out?
It's okay. We understand the emotion. It's a powerful moment. And it's a powerful moment for us, too. Thank you for sharing it with us.
We got on our knees and we kissed the ground. American soil.
What did that... I don't want to...
That was the happiest day of my life. That's... We were all full of tears, crying, you know. luckily, you had some people in New York or other people, you know, who came long time ago, waited for us, and they took care of us for a couple of days before they sent us to Chicago. And then in Chicago, we had another church people and a priest who became bishop of American Orthodox people and Serbian Orthodox people. And they took us to the monastery in Libertyville. We have about 2-3 monasteries there. Mm-hmm. And we stayed there for about 3 weeks mm-hmm. till we got a little bit more stronger. They found the jobs, and that was the beginning of my life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my first job was a tailor shop in downtown Chicago, and I made a $75 pay. Boy, did I turn it into the Serbian money dinars. I couldn't believe making so much money. My first check was $16. Yeah, I sent that first check to my mom. Uh-huh. She survived the war. She went through the and lived in the forest, you know, with a couple of little children that she was saving. And that was another sad day in my life. That my mom, for 2 years when I was taking care of American consulate and going to school, the Germans stopped all the mail from, Tito, communist stopped yeah. all the mails coming from prisoners of war from Germany that didn't return. They destroyed the mail. My mom didn't know for 2 years
that you were alive.
Well, they lied. Communists lied to our parents that we were killed by American bombing. My mom got so sick. She was dying. My brother was a priest, older brother. He had to come from Serbia, about 500 miles, right away to give the prayers to my mom. At that day, when my brother came to see my mom, she was already almost like 2-3 days, they never opened their eyes. When my brother arrived, my first letter came from America. In 2 years. And my check was $60 that I made, sent my mom. First letter, first check, and my brother came to see my mom. They read the letter, brother. He started hollering, "Mom, Mom, Mona is alive. Mona is alive, Mom. Wake up." First time in 3 days, she opened her eyes. She left her hand barely and tried to get the letter. She put the letter on her mouth. She's trying to kiss me, you know.
Yeah.
Would you believe she recovered from that sickness? Mm-hmm. She was dying. My brother had a service for her. He was a priest. She recovered. And at night, my dad was in Australia in 1933. He went to make some money so he can send us children to school. My mom joined him in 1953. She recovered. She was the happiest woman in the world. And she said, "Thank God he's in America." He said, "Don't even come back." In 1959, my mom and dad came back from Australia.
Uh-huh.
And in 1969, 10 years later, I went first time in Yugoslavia after 32 years.
You went back?
I went back. So my mom and dad and sister, brothers, and a few other that survived.
The first time in almost 30 years that you'd
32
seen,
years.
32 yeah. years that first you had seen them.
Yeah, that was.
I've got to ask this. I mean, when you... From the time you became a prisoner of war to the time you came to the United States, you moved from being a man of 20, young man of 20 to about 26.
I was 25. Right. I was already 25 when I came to the United States.
So a good portion of your young manhood had been taken away there.
Yes.
Were you angry about that?
About what?
About having the war consume that much of your life.
There's nothing you could help. I was happy that I survived, that I'm alive. I was happy, the happiest man in the world, that I was in America. That was impossible dream. That still is my biggest thank to God that I have come to this blessed country, and that I raised a beautiful family. I have two gorgeous daughters. I have four grandchildren, three girls that finished the university. Mm-hmm. I sent them to the school. They don't owe one penny to school, and then I have four grandchildren, two granddaughters. One is in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. She finished at Purdue University last year, and one is here. And I have a most wonderful family. God couldn't give me anything more and blessed me more than being in this God-blessed country.
How many years have you been married?
I was married 52 years.
52 yeah. years?
What I was married. My wife died from cancer of the breast.
Oh.
She lost both breasts, you know.
Oh. And you have two daughters, four grandchildren.
Four grandchildren.
How old are you now?
The youngest one is 22 years old, and then the others, two boys are 22. And 19, and my other daughter, granddaughter, is 28, and my daughter is 59, older, and the younger one is 39, and 34, the younger one.
I'd like to thank you very much for coming in to talk with us and for sharing your story. We have been talking with former World War II prisoner of war, Mane Bubalo, on this special edition of No Limits.
I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for this greatest honor that I had in my life speaking to you.
Thank you. It has been, I say this for all of the people who've been listening to this, it has been our honor.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank the audience. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producer, Cedric Freeman, and board engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.